Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Ruby Rogues podcast. This week on our panel, we have Valentino Stoll.
Hey, now.
John Epperson.
Hello, everybody.
I'm Charles Max Wood from Top End Devs, and this week we have a special guest, and that is Bruno, is it Sutic?
Sutic.
Do you want to introduce yourself real quick, let people know who you are and why you're awesome?
Sure. Hi, everybody. I'm very happy to be here on the show. So, I've been a Ruby developer, Ruby programmer for, I think, more than 10 years now. Yeah, it's been 11 years now. Actually, before being a Ruby programmer, I started wanting to be a project manager at IBM here in Zagreb, Croatia. But I quickly realized that's not what I want to be, and that's not what I want to become in life. And somehow I discovered Ruby, fell in love with it, and it's been a nice romance since. And yeah, so I think, you know, in terms of my resume or, you know, what I've been doing, it's been pretty standard. I've done some agency work for a couple of years, like three or four years. Then I've had another job with a product-based IoT company from Denver. We've been doing internet-connected locks, right? Like a solution where you can connect to your door and do whatever, right? So that's been really nice. And since about 2 years now, I've been doing my own product. I'm starting something and working on it for more than a year now. And I think that's it. You know, I think that's it in terms of I've been finding about async. It's been just a luck, you know. I've been evaluating it for my project. I kind of decided to work in it, to implement it, and yeah, I've been working with async Ruby for about a year and a half now, you know. And I think it's really, really nice. And I think Rubyists and people, Ruby community, really needs to look into it because it's awesome. Async Ruby really is awesome. And I guess we're here to just, you know, kind of get familiarized with it and spread the word.
Hey, folks, this is Charles Max Wood from Top End Devs. And lately, I've been working on actually building out Top End Devs. If you're interested, you can go to topenddevs.com/podcast, and you can actually hear a little bit more about my story, about why I'm doing what I'm doing with Top End Devs, why I changed it from devchat.tv to Top End Devs. But what I really want to get into is that I have decided that I'm going to build the platform that I always wished I had with devchat.tv, and I renamed it to Top End Devs because I want to give you the resources that are going to help you to build the career that you want, right? So whether you want to be an influencer in tech, whether you want to go and just max out your salary and then go live a lifestyle with your family, your friends, or just traveling the world or whatever, I want to give you the resources that are going to help you do that. We're going to have career and leadership resources in there, and we're going to be giving you content on a regular basis to help you level up and max out your career. So go check it out at topenddevs.com. If you sign up before my birthday, that's December 14th. If you sign up before my birthday, you can get 50% off the lifetime of your subscription. Once again, that's topenddevs.com.
So Bruno, before we jump in here really quick, just wanted to ask you, you said that you'd been working on a project for over a year now. Is it a secret? Are you telling us what it is? Just kind of curious maybe what it was, if you wanted to say. If you don't, that's okay too.
So about my product, right? So I am kind of holding it to myself. So yeah, it is kind of not really top secret, but like I'm not being open with it.
100% okay.
So hopefully that's okay. That's clear.
Okay then. Cool. Sounds great. Let's talk about async.
So there's a lot of async libraries out there for Ruby. What I guess brought you to async in the first place, and what do you think is better about it than maybe some of the others?
It's a good question. It's a really, really good question. Okay, so full disclosure, I do know about other async libraries out there, but I do not have extensive experience with them, right? I've just like kind of evaluated it quickly and chosen async, right? Async Ruby. And what really, why async and why not something else is the main developer of async Ruby is a Ruby core committer, right? And there has been a lot of parts required for async Ruby to work really nice with Ruby that have been brought into the Ruby core, right? Into Ruby language. In addition to that, Mats, the creator of Ruby language, has invited and Async Ruby to be a standard into standard library. I guess it's called a bundle gem now, you know? But anyway, Async Ruby has been invited to Ruby standard library, you know? And that kind of piqued my interest, you know? Why is this library more like special than any other library, right? And as I dove into it, you know, it kind of became clear that currently, as things stand, Async Ruby does have a very, very strong support from Ruby core team. What that means is there are a lot of features that have been introduced into, say, Ruby 3.0, Ruby 3.1, into core Ruby that are benefiting Async, the library, the gem. And, I think that's it. And so that's one side, of course. The other side is Async Gem itself is really, really nice to work with. I mean, nice as in not nicer than other async, you know, other async libraries in Ruby that are like nicer than work than most other languages out there, right? I guess the most common async language that support async and has the asynchronous paradigm is, of course, JavaScript. Like everyone knows that, right? And, you know, I'm going to be bold here and say, look, Async Ruby is much nicer to work with than the asynchronous paradigm in JavaScript. So yeah, it's a really, really nice gem. Yeah, that enjoys the support of Ruby core team. I think that's it.
So what brought you to start using it and experimenting with it?
So as I mentioned, I have this my project that I'm pushing, and I needed, you know, some approach to make many HTTP requests in parallel, right? I needed something. So one common approach is, you know, as I already mentioned, using threads, right? If you want to make like, you know, 20 requests, HTTP requests in parallel, and then wait for some time for all of them to resolve, you use threads in Ruby commonly. And if you start building your app around it, if that logic gets more complicated, you soon discover that threads really have their downsides when it comes to complexity of handling them, right? I've done threads, raw Ruby threads in Ruby for other things. And let me tell you, that is like, I'm not going to say help. If you know what you're doing, you're going to be fine. But they're complex. Working with raw Ruby threads is complex. And so, you know, I needed something else other than threads to make many HTTP requests in parallel, many at the same time. And search for solutions, and you know, async really stood out from anything else that's out there currently in Ruby landscape, you know, right?
So I'm just kind of curious, you know, as we kind of pull this in and start using it in you said you're using this on a project, like how easy is it to pull in and implement? And does it really change the way that you think about Ruby? Because it's one thing if it's, hey, you know, I get ABC benefits out of it, but also, you know, it's like, is it a giant pain? Is it, oh man, I got to kind of bend my brain around this other way of thinking, stuff like that?
That's really good questions. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, I mean, of course, it depends on what you're trying to do, right? I'd say, you know, a good first task or a challenge for anyone coming into Async Ruby and wanting to experiment with it would be, you know, you have a scenario where maybe you have a challenging, you want to make an API client and, you know, and it requires you to have, there are scenarios where you need to like make 5 requests in parallel, right? And that's it. You know, you just make 5 requests in parallel, just wait in parallel, of course. And then once you get the, you know, all the results, you make something with it and you're good, right? That's, I think, an easy scenario, right? And I think using async in that case is really simple, right? It just, you know, making a couple API requests, network requests. Once you're done, just work with it in a regular Ruby way. I think that's really, really easy to do. And I guess, you know, another question that could be asked is like, okay, is that the only thing that async can do? Of course not. You know, in the async core gem, named async, of course, there are a couple more things, a couple more utility classes that are bundled in it with the gem that you can use, right? And so if you decide to move on from that simple network example with 5 requests, I think you're well equipped with Async Gem to handle more complex scenarios. And yes, there's some degree of learning when it comes to, you know, building more complex logic with async. But I think, you know, there are a couple concepts that, you need, you know, if you want to go advanced with async, there are a couple concepts that you kind of want to understand, yeah, before going advanced with it. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's the answer to the question. I mean, I could go deeper, but maybe, you know, if you guys want to just steer the direction of, the conversation, that would be awesome. I don't want to, I kind of feel uneasy talking the whole time by myself. So, yeah.
Sure. I have a bunch of questions here. I guess one thing I always think about when worrying about throwing HTTP requests in particular, right, and something concurrent, especially thinking about, like, you know, a lot of people think about jobs, background jobs, right? Like throwing a bunch of stuff on a queue and having it churn through kind of asynchronously, right? So to speak, as it pulls things off. But there's a lot of issues, right, where you kind of have to make sure everything can be run again, right? Like if it fails, you need to, it'll retry, and you need to be able to say, okay, like build it so that it can run again without any issue. And also, like, if there's a one slow request out of the group, does that slow down the whole group? Yeah, as John is letting me know, idempotency for those background workers. But so I'm curious if you're familiar kind of with how maybe async can solve some of these issues, or if there are special considerations you have to consider when using async, or maybe it's not meant for those purposes.
No, that's a good question. Yeah. All right. So I'm kind of thinking what's the best approach to answer this question. So look, I think, like, if you think about a background queue, like Cyclic, you know, the most common one, I think that's just like, that's not relatable in a way to async, right? Like async is much lower level library in a way. It's much closer to the core Ruby language. It's just like a more simpler primitive, so to say. It's much easier to compare raw threads with async and, you know, fibers. So async runs on fibers. So those things are kind of comparable, right? If you think about a background queue like Cyclic, I think that's a much higher level library where all these features that you mentioned, like retries and, you know, I guess pulling things from a queue and just some kind of a resiliency, you know, if you like restart your app and there's like some jobs that have not finished that are retried and all that. I mean, I think those features are just like a higher level, you know, at the higher level. If you, so for example, you know, Cyclic uses thread, like that would maybe be comparable. Like what if you built some kind of a background worker system built on async? That would be comparable, right? So hopefully that makes sense. I think comparing a Cyclic with async does not really make sense. You would have to maybe go lower level and compare threads with async, right? That said, you know, if anyone is asking if there is a background job system built on async, there, to my knowledge, there is no such a gem has not been written, right? Right now, you know, async does have a core gem and a pretty rich ecosystem of other gems, you know, that can work really nicely in an asynchronous way. But like a full-fledged background job worker that you can just plug into Rails and it works? No, currently no. One thing to say, I know when we're talking about Cyclic, I think you can really nicely use async within Cyclic. So, you know, if you have a need to make a large number, you know, HTTP requests and you choose Cyclic, you can still use async within Cyclic job to kind of speed things up and to not clog your Sidekick queues and similar. So
yeah, I guess I was getting at with the comparison of Sidekick is, I forget the library, but I think it's by Evil Martians, where they allow you to kind of batch similar jobs together to process them in bulk. And so I'm wondering maybe if there could be some kind of batch queuing system, like you were saying, that could process things, you know, similar jobs in parallel, just to churn through things faster and keep the queue moving. But going off of the topic of Rails, so I did read in your article that it's not quite ready fully for Active Record. What's kind of left in that? Because I know there are two open issues. Can you speak to kind of where those are and kind of what limitations there are?
Yeah. So, okay. I mean, I do have to say a disclaimer. So I'm not, so currently the most experience I have is just raw async, right? Building a plain Ruby app with async So I'm not trying to implement async with Rails, right? And as I mentioned, I think currently that's not possible in a classical way where a Rails app is backed by a classic database like Postgres or MySQL. That said, when it comes to challenges of working, you know, using async with Rails, there's been, I think, to my knowledge, there's one core problem, and that is making active record connection pool work on a fiber local level, if that makes sense. That is at least my understanding. Of course, I'm not an expert on Rails or active record internals. So in another way, the challenge or the outstanding issue is instead of making a database connection per thread, Rails needs to handle one database connection per fiber. We have not talked about fibers yet a lot, but you know that's the equivalent of a thread in an async in an async paradigm. So in a Rails app that is working with async, a single HTTP request would be handled not in a single thread, but in a single fiber, right? So if you think about Puma, you know, of course it's multi-process, you know, that's standard, but it's also can be multi-threaded, right? So a single process has say 10 or 20 threads. So with a single process, you can handle 20 HTTP requests in parallel. If you work with async, you know, if async was supported, a parallelism that could be achieved would go much, much higher, right? And the reason for that is that because fibers are way more cheaper in terms of resources than threads. A common standard recommendation for using threads is, you know, okay, if you want to go, you know, large, you can go 50 threads in a single process. Maybe you can push it to 100 threads in a single process, but you know, that's pretty much it. If you go above 100 threads per Ruby process, you either know what you're doing and you're like expert on it, or you're just like wrong. So that's the story with threads. When it comes to fibers, you can have, like, I think I've heard people talking about low level millions. So, you know, a single Ruby process can work with a low level couple million fibers at the same time, right? Of course, it has to be a special use case, right? It does not apply to all the scenarios. But the parallelism that could be achieved in a Rails app is much, much higher than with threads. Of course, that's still, you know, kind of theoretical. We first need to kind of iron out those outstanding Rails issues and really try it out. But the kind of promise is like really interesting, to say the least.
All the talk of Puma unnecessarily supporting it. Out of the box, because I know it has some limitations on what it supports with HTTP2. But so, how does somebody use async, right? Like, what do they need the latest Ruby to be able to take advantage of it? Like, is it backported to a certain point? Is there like kind of a bare minimum criteria you have to have before it even makes sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a good question. All right. So, As I mentioned a couple of times, async is a really low level interface, right? It's related to Ruby threads. So, you know, the question may be like, what can you do with threads? Like, you can do many things. You can be on the server side and handle, you know, many requests in parallel, or you can be on like the client side and make many requests in parallel. So, before maybe attacking the question directly, I want to talk, with async, you can do the same thing, right? You can use the raw async library and just maybe do whatever you want in Ruby with it. And then there's like, you know, also async HTTP gem. That's like an kind of powerful HTTP library. That's, you know, it could be used as like an API client for making requests, right? That's one approach. Also, there's Falcon, the gem that's really written around an async core that you can use to handle HTTP requests. There's many things that can be used with async, and it's a pretty low level primitive in Ruby. So back to maybe your question, to answer it more directly, I think Ruby 2.6 is supported, but there are some limitations. For example, if you wanna make HTTP requests asynchronously with Ruby 2 something, right? Any Ruby 2 library, you would have to use async HTTP. So that's another library, right? Now, if you are on Ruby 3.0, you do not have to depend on async HTTP. You can only use async gem, and using any other HTTP library is supported out of the box because of the fiber scheduler feature that was merged into Ruby 3.0. Mm-hmm. So for example, you can use net HTTP that's built into Ruby and make asynchronous HTTP requests with it, but you also have to just depend on the async gem. So that's Ruby 3.0. The only kind of hard dependency is the core async gem. Now, if we move on to Ruby 3.1, there's nothing new, I guess there are a couple new features there, but I think you still have to depend on the async gem. So yeah, I think that's kind of the direct answer, right? 2.something Ruby, yeah, you can work with async, but you kind of need to depend on more gems. Whereas in Ruby 3.0, the only hard requirement is the async gem itself.
So in your great RubyConf talk, you kind of walk through a lot of the, I guess, how async works, right? With the event reactor and fibers and mm-hmm. the fiber scheduler. So it kind of seems like, because I know you made kind of a comment in one of your articles about Matt's regretting making fibers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it seems like, almost seems like we're coming back to liking fibers now that some improvements have been made.
No, I think I have to correct you. So Matt's never said he regrets making fibers. Matt said that he regrets adding threads into Ruby. I think that's a big difference, right?
Oh yeah.
So threads really are really hard to work with directly in Ruby because of their inherent complexities, But fibers, yeah, I think that's a different story. So yeah, I think a lot of these things, async and fibers and, fiber scheduler, event selector, those concepts are pretty hard to talk in the Ruby community. Just for the reason, I think us Rubies, we're just not accustomed to working with these things, We're not used to working with for example, event selector, right? I don't think a lot of Rubies even know what it is, right? So just to clarify, event selector, I'm thinking something about EPAL on Linux or KQ on a Mac or even newer IOU ring on Linux, which is like a hot new technology. That's not relevant for us Rubies. We're living in a Rails land or, just like a Ruby object land. We don't concern ourselves with EPAL. So, async brings these things, benefits of these concepts into Ruby. And it's kind of hard to, spread the news because not a lot of people know what an event selector is, same thing with fibers, how many Rubies really understand fibers? That's like a really, really low level technology. So yeah, I think in order to, for people to understand the awesomeness of async, we kind of have to, dig into, a little bit into these, harder topics, But yeah, did I digress?
No, you're fine.
Oh, thanks.
So how do you go about testing your async code?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think honestly, it's just nothing special. You just use RSpec, of course, or Minitest if that's your thing. I'm an RSpec guy. And, my current approach has been just like a high level integration test. And really, there can be a scenario where you do not even have to have anything specific to async in your test. You can just test your code as a regular Ruby code, right? Your tests do not have to know that, back to the standard common async example where you're making five HTTP requests in parallel. Your our spec or your test do not have to know that you're making those requests in parallel as opposed to synchronously, right? Like, unless you're, of course, timing, you know, making like some kind of time-based expectations in your tests. But, you know, if you go back to common examples, like in RSpec, you just want to make sure that you made those 5 requests, for example. And if you mm-hmm. just plug in VCR, again, your RSpec code does not even have to know you're using async. In fact, I feel comfortable saying, like, if you, for example, for some reason, tear out async, use threads, for your basic API client example, your specs should all pass, I think. So, that said, I guess, you know, you were asking, like, you could ask if there's anything else. There is, like, if you're using advanced async, you know, if you're, for example, I've written a library with async. So then again, you know, if it's built wholly around async, of course, you would have to, you know, your specs do have to know that it's an async world. So there is an RSpec async library, or is it async RSpec? I kind of forgot. So async RSpec or RSpec async, made by the same creator as async Ruby. And it has a couple simple assertions that you can use to you just more easily test your async code. So, you know, that's it. If anyone is interested in testing your advanced async code, there is this library that makes it a breeze.
All right. So my question for you right at this moment is, it kind of has to do with like workloads. And we've talked a little bit about why you might choose to use async or whatever. And I feel like for me, what's really important, like when I'm talking about parallelism to other developers, is kind of describing what the problem is. I feel like that's like the only way that I've ever been able to successfully communicate some of this stuff with people. So the thing that I'm thinking about kind of harkens back a little bit to Valentino's question earlier, which is, what kinds of workloads do you feel like work well with async? So for example, you've talked a lot about like HTTP requests. I'm gonna make a ton of HTTP requests in parallel. And I'm thinking about use cases for the most part where I make a bunch of requests, but then maybe I parse all of them, or maybe I'm adding records to my database, right? And that kind of use case happens to fit really well, for example, just shoving it into Sidekick. So the thing that I thought of, I was like, well, you know, maybe I grab a bunch of, I do a bunch of HTTP requests, like maybe I'm checking statuses, right, of a bunch of pages or something. So I'm literally just grabbing the HTTP status or something. Could you talk a little bit about like maybe what use cases would make sense with like this kind of low level parallelism, right, versus like the sort of high level abstracted parallelism that throwing something in a Sidekick queue is giving us?
Yeah. Okay. So I heard you, John, but unfortunately you were choppy again. So what I heard, the part that I heard was, what kind of workload is a good fit for async? I think that's a good question. And then another thing, it was about Sidekick, but I unfortunately did not understand it well because of the choppiness. So maybe I can answer the first question, and then if someone can please repeat the second part. So about what kind of workload is good for async, it's a good question. So I think any IO bound workload is just awesome for async, right? As opposed to CPU bound. And what do we mean by IO, right? Of course, it's making or receiving or handling requests. It could be HTTP, it could be something else. That is just an awesome fit for async. Especially if you are not making a lot of use of the CPU, that's a fantastic fit for async. On the other hand, you know, if you have a lot of heavy duty CPU processing, maybe you're like generating PDFs and it takes a lot of time, stuff like that, it's not a good fit. And maybe not to answer the question shallowly, maybe I can go just a tad deeper into it. So async is using, we mentioned fibers, and fibers, they work in a paradigm that's called cooperative concurrency, right? And that is opposed to how threads work, where each thread gets a fixed time execution. And at that point, it stops, it's interrupted by, you know, a thread scheduler, and another is then resumed, right? So with threads, you could not have a scenario where you have 50 threads. And just one thread is taking up all of your CPU resources and just working indefinitely. That cannot happen with threads because you have a thread scheduler, and after a certain number of milliseconds, that thread scheduler saying, okay, thread number one, you stop now, and then resume another random thread that you have going on. Now, that's the scenario with threads. With async, you have these fibers, and what can happen if you throw a CPU heavy workload into async and into fibers, a single fiber can really clog your CPU. If you start working some heavy CPU intensive computation, a single fiber can just work on it indefinitely, and that can clog all of your other fibers. So the reason for that is because with this cooperative paradigm, a fiber has to voluntarily pass the execution to some other fiber, and that does not happen explicitly, right? It's not that you code in your code, you have, okay, we are on async fiber number one, and then we pass it to fiber number two, for example. No, that happens in these, like, we can call them yield points. For example, if a fiber number one just finished making the HTTP request and now has to wait for 200 milliseconds, well, in that case, the fiber scheduler will say, this is a good point where for 200 milliseconds or even more, we can transfer the context of execution to some other fiber that was waiting. So that's a different paradigm. And yeah, I mean, I think I kind of dug in deeper into why maybe, these fibers in async are more like better for IO heavy workloads as opposed to CPU heavy, right? Of course, you can still do CPU computations within your async tasks and all that. But I think that's the only thing that you're working with is CPU computation that kind of does not make sense. Hopefully that answers the first part of the question.
Hey folks, I'm here with JD from Raygun. You know, JD, we were talking just a second ago about empathy, and it seems like a common concept within the programming community. And yet when we're building features for customers, a lot of times we call it done when it passes CI, deploys, and doesn't give us errors. And that really doesn't seem very empathetic when it comes to our customers because we're not looking at what they're doing. Do you have thoughts on this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, until your code actually hits the customer, you don't really know if it's any good. Everybody uses things in so many different weird and wonderful ways. You can only really debug in production.
I've been there. It's done. It's not done. Oh, crap. It's not done. I got to go fix it. Now it's done.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we see things like error reports flowing into Raygun,
right,
a lot of the time it's things where you just kind of go, oh, that was a configuration that as a developer, mm-hmm, I didn't think could exist, but actually here's an example. And so it's connecting that code to customer and your development team through to real users and their experiences, which to your point, builds real empathy. And the best software teams care a lot about how their customers are experiencing their software.
Right. It's kind of the feedback from the app, but it's also kind of this meta feedback. As we do better, we tend to get less of this negative input back from our customer, which really does reflect empathy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think to your point earlier about CI/CD pipelines, like we've done an amazing amount of work as an industry to automate getting to prod really fast. But if you really want to go super fast, you need to close that loop with real-time feedback from prod back to the dev team. And that allows them to do things like fail forward and just really leverage that investment in CI/CD, and it can turn into a real superpower.
Yep, absolutely. So I'm going to encourage you folks, set up your CI/CD, but then go sign up for Raygun. They'll actually give you a free trial and you can get it at raygun.com.
Now, can you guys please repeat the second question, or maybe we can want something else?
Yeah, go ahead and ask the second part, John.
I'll re-ask it, and if he can't understand, any chance one of you guys could rephrase it. So what I was trying to ask was, kind of earlier we had talked about Sidekick as sort of like an high-level abstraction of parallelism, right? And my thought here was, so you talked about in your article and today, HTTP requests and parallel, and so a network IO request. And I guess file IO probably fits this bill same way. But I was thinking, okay, so we often use Sidekick as sort of like that high level abstraction where I'm like, oh, I'm going to make 100 HTTP requests or whatever, 1,000, 1,000,000, whatever. And I want to parse my responses and do something with it. Maybe I want to drop something in a database or whatever it is, right? So, but I have work to do after I get it back. And so I can parallelize that whole process on a per, you know, basis by queuing up a million sidekick jobs. And I was just kind of curious, like, for me, I'm thinking, okay, maybe a good fit for async versus sidekick is like, basically, I guess more or less what you said, right? Like no CPU processing time here, right? Like I just want to grab the HTTP status or something. Sorry, I kind of lost my question. So I had to rephrase it and rethink it through.
Could you repeat because it was choppy for me.
Yeah, I caught the first part of it and then I couldn't understand the last part of it.
I think I know what John is talking about. So like currently we have like this abstraction of Sidekick where you just throw a bunch of stuff at it onto the queue and it'll work and churn through it sort of asynchronously as pull jobs off as they're available. And that's kind of like the approach people have taken when they want to background something, a group of processes. And so what I guess is the advantage of like, is there some kind of some differences between those ideas or advantages over using like async versus just having a background processor? Does it like, what's the value, I guess, of having the async versus having something like Sidekick to process jobs? Like, is there now no longer a reason to have Sidekick around now that we have this new fiber scheduler and async to kind of do these things that it already does?
Right. I think it's a good question. I think that's a, so to be clear, I think Sidekick still does have its place for sure. For sure. Like there's like, I think no way async can invalidate that. But yeah, let me think about, I'm thinking how to best approach the answering this question. So, okay. So I heard John like ask this question, like if you have a million HTTP requests, you just enqueue million Sidekick HTTP jobs and just let it churn and you're good. That's how would you currently do it in Ruby. That's fine, I think. What async can improve is really, I mean, maybe I can't really talk abstractly, but like, let me say this. So what I've built, you know, part of my project with async, I've built a crawler, right? So I think it's exactly the use case you're talking about. Like I'm trying to crawl a website that has like 10 million pages, right? So I practically have a queue of 10 million requests to make, right? Where async comes into place is it's just much more, it's like I can easily make a couple hundred HTTP requests in parallel. Whereas I think on a single CPU, by the way, right? Whereas I think, for example, with Sidekick, I did not think it's advised. You know, I think the maximum parallelism, like the maximum number of threads per Sidekick process, I guess around 50. So I think that's like a simple answer. Like async allows you, and that's just talking about a single CPU, right? If you kind of scale it up to multiple CPU, you just, you know, multiply the benefits or, you know, we're not talking about multiple, you know, multi-CPU. We're just talking about single CPU, single Ruby process. That's, I think, a simple answer. Now, the reason why you want to keep a Sidekick for a crawler, I think async is just an ideal use case for a crawler. Like, that's just perfect. Like, but like in general, if we're talking about Sidekick and why Sidekick still does have a like future, but like, you know, it's not going to go away. Sidekick handles CPU workloads really well, you know, in addition to, you know, handling these many, many network requests fairly well, I'd say. So yeah, in Sidekick, if you're doing like, you know, many, many CPU intensive computations, you know, Sidekick is a good fit for that. You know, just probably need more CPUs, but you know, you're good, you're well covered. So yeah, but you know, if you're really, you know, working with some network intensive workloads, you know, I think there's no better fit than async. But then again, you know, I don't want to emphasize that too much because I think async really does have a place in simple scenarios where like, you know, and that is also something I have recently been working on. You know, I have a Sidekick, I also use Sidekick and in project of mine that I'm working on. And I do, so I've had this use case. I also have many a network request to make. And instead of making a single job for each network request, I am reluctant to do that because I could easily clog my Sidekick queue. So with that many, you know, network requests. Instead, what I'm doing way, way lesser number of Sidekick jobs, like a reasonable number of Sidekick jobs, and then using async within the Sidekick job to kind of, within a single job, to make many, you know, network requests. And I think that's a really, really nice use case. You know, you get the best, you get the best of both worlds. I get the benefits of Sidekick. That's like the robustness, the retries, the nice integration with Rails. And then I also get a really nice benefits of async, where I do not have to use many resources, many Sidekick jobs to make, you know, many network requests. So just to make it clear, async and Sidekick are not exclusive. And that's, I think, the message that I'm trying to build. I think they're like, you know, if you're comparing them, I think they're not exclusive. Instead, I think they're really like mutually beneficial in this way, where, you know, you can run async within your Sidekick jobs. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, I think this makes a lot of sense. I'm thinking too, like, you know, even in workers or service objects that we've kind of started moving to, if you have a rake task as an example that you want, you have a cron on that you're batching active record groups and then processing something on those batches. Uh-huh. It makes a lot of sense to throw in an async task, right? That you can then parallelize those batches that ultimately compute the same things, but you want to do them in parallel. That makes a lot of sense. And then in the context of Sidekick too, Sidekick is a queue, not necessarily a processor, right? So I guess it makes sense to move the async kind of inside of those jobs for batching work that you want done.
Exactly.
So I guess this brings me around to, you know, what are some caveats? What are some things that you ran into? Like, I know we've talked a lot about network IO and the benefits of that. Like, is it the same with file? Is it any IO? Like, working with files also beneficial? Have you had issues kind of like that came up, where maybe the days of using threads you felt more, you know, were better because they're more familiar?
It's a really good question. There are caveats, of course. So look, async, and here I'm talking about the gem, async gem, and also the core Ruby, you know, the core Ruby components that have, you know, the things that have been built into core Ruby, like a fiber scheduler. That is, look, it's cutting edge, right? There's no way around it. It's like a still new technology, and a lot of new things have been brought into Ruby 3.1. So, you know, as with any new technology, there's caveats, right? There's like not a lot of documentation. If you Google it, if you like search on Stack Overflow, there's not a lot of answers, just because this stuff is new, you know, and not a lot of people have had a chance to experiment with it and use it in their projects. That's, of course, a caveat. Another thing is like, yeah, I mean, it's simple, right? If you start with a simple example, you will get it working relatively fast. Then again, if you try digging in, you know, if you need more advanced stuff, you kind of need to understand more of it. Like, just like threads, you know, if you're going to go advanced with threads, you kind of have to know about mutexes. You have to know about like condition variables, just how threads are scheduled and how you can pause a thread. Like, there's all sorts of, you know, gotchas when it comes to advanced usage. So async has that as well. You know, you have to know about fibers. You kind of have to wrap your head around fibers. You have to kind of get familiarized with some of these concepts in async library. Again, this is if you're going to go advanced with it, if you're going to start, you know, really go all in on it. So that's it. You also mentioned file IO. That's a good question. So currently, async does not support, you cannot make a file IO asynchronous, right? So that means if you're like writing two big files, it's going to be, you know, just the first file and then the second file. There's like no, you cannot parallelize it currently. That said, something is cooking in, you know, the async camp, and there will be surprises soon. I think so. Look, I'm not the creator of async. I'm just like a guy using it, trying to use it, trying to understand it. The gem creator is Samuel Williams. I have to mention this guy because he is just brilliant, and he built, he's responsible for both async and the Ruby helpers and everything that has landed into Ruby core language related to async. It's been the responsibility of Samuel Williams, and he's been doing just a terrific job with it. And yeah, I mean, there are some things that are cooking, and maybe we will soon have some news related to File.io. The reason why I don't want to make any like announcements is because Samuel himself does not like to make them. And I think the approach he is taking is like, you know, first release it, make sure it's working for everyone, and then make everyone know about it. So I guess if it's okay to leave it as like a bit more speculative here in the podcast, because I think that the approach the async core team is taking.
That's fair. I think they'll make the announcement when they're ready, right?
Yeah.
John brought up a good point in our chat here that this begs to answer the age-old question, which, you know, I actually care about a lot too, is, you know, does async solve the ability to run commands outside of Ruby and grabbing the output, like something like popen3?
Good question. Yeah. Async does support parallelizing commands, right? So yes, like if I know some companies and some projects are relying on external processes a lot. For example, if I think a friend of mine had a project where he is using Image Magic, right? So he is invoking external shell out external commands from Ruby that are performing some kind of image processing and similar. So if you're doing that or something similar from Ruby, that again is an awesome use case for async, because if you are executing external executables, yeah, you can definitely make that in parallel from Ruby. You can have many many parallel system commands, and then just work with them in a convenient way from async. Yeah.
Yeah. Luckily, Image Magic doesn't seem to trigger those exceptions, but it does suck when you have a process that triggers it.
Right.
So I guess we should kind of follow up with the future. Mm-hmm. Right. Like where is this take? Like, I know async isn't officially adopted into Ruby yet, although it has been kind of discussed on the message boards. But it does seem like this one thing I really loved about the async framework in general is that you just throw something in a block and suddenly you get the magic of parallelism. And I think that's definitely the appeal for a lot of people, right? That they can just adopt it and it will know that it'll just work, and kind of can sideways test it out in Ruby to see if that is the best way to go forward. But it does seem really promising, right? Like, this does seem to be like what will get adopted if you want to do this kind of thing with Ruby. Do you believe that as well? Like, is there something more coming where you can feel a little more comfortable with that? Or maybe what's something missing that you wish was there?
Good question. Okay, so I think you already brought this question, but I think the most logical sequence of events for async would be to kind of some way support File.io, right? Everything, like a lot of things that are really natural can be parallelized. We talk about, you know, these external processes, of course, network IO, all sorts of things. And I think the only, and that is not just a problem of async Ruby. If you look at many other languages out there, let's take Node.js, for example. File.io has been hard to make async, and there are good reasons. And, you know, there's like been articles written on the internet while like many languages have async paradigms, and I'm not even sure if there's any mainstream language that supports File.io. I'm not super, you know, I'm not an expert on many languages, of course, but like I think that holds true. You know, I think the standard Python library does not support File.io. Node.js does support it, but like it's bad by a thread pool. I think, yeah, as I mentioned, so handling File.io in a like a native async way, that's a hard problem. I'm not even sure if any mainstream language does support it, but I think it is the step that's missing. Like, you know, if you think about the core Ruby philosophy, like just making everything easy, the developer happiness, you know, just like things working intuitively. I think, you know, if we want to get async there, I think File.io is the next step. And as I mentioned, you know, there's probably going to be some news soonish. Maybe, you know, while we're still at Ruby 3.1, maybe with Ruby 3.2, but, you know, I believe we will get there. The second thing that I think, if anyone is going to play with async, that thing is cutting edge and there is a lot of change. The API itself is relatively stable, but again, you know, there's been a lot of change in between Ruby 3.0 and Ruby 3.1. A lot of new concepts have been introduced into Ruby core language, right? So, you know, if you're really going advanced, you know, doing advanced stuff, depending on like a lot of internals or, you know, just, I think that's a, you know, a new technology that's changing, evolving, improving fast. So there are some downsides to it, a lot of learning, stuff like that. So yeah, I you know, I think in a year or two, async will get way, way more stable in terms of like just the concepts and how things work and the internals and all that. And I think it will really be like a really, really embodiment of a Ruby spirit, you know, super easy to work with, reliable, and really no surprises. Yeah, that's something I'm looking forward to with async. If there's anything else, like, I think like beyond async, you know, if you're thinking like, you know, currently async has its own APIs, right? Which you, Valentino, you mentioned it, like, you know, you have this async keyword, then there's a block, you spin up a couple of tasks, and that's how things work. But like, if you think about it, like on a deeper level, like why can't we have the asynchronous paradigm working just with raw fibers, you know, going back to threads, like, you know, if you want to achieve some kind of, if you want to have multiple threads, so threads are not parallel, they're like just running kind of at the same time, you just spin raw threads. And why couldn't we just spin raw fibers and have them run in some kind of, you know, concurrent way, you know, and if you run, you know, multiple requests within, multiple HTTP requests within those fibers, those requests can run in parallel. So I think I've heard, you know, the async Ruby creator, and it's been brought up in async gem issue tracker on GitHub. I think that is also something we'll get to in a couple of years, maybe, or maybe even sooner, where we will be able to like get away with like the async gem and really use just raw fibers and achieve, you know, similar, of course, results, where, you know, those fibers, you'll be able to have many, many concurrent fibers and just use, so, you know, using raw fibers instead of having this async gem and async tasks abstractions. So I think, yeah, we'll get there too as well.
Cool. Well, let's do some picks.
Hi, this is Charles Max Wood from Top End Devs. And lately I've been coaching some people on starting some podcasts and in some cases, just taking their career to the next level. You know, whether you're beginner going to intermediate going to advanced, whether you're trying to get noticed in the community or go freelance, I've been helping these folks figure out how to get in front of people, how to build relationships, and how to build their careers and max out and just go to the next level. So if you're interested in talking to me and having me help you go to the next level, go to topenddevs.com/coaching. I will give you a 1-hour free session where we can figure out what you're trying to do, where you're trying to go, and figure out what the next steps are. And then from there, we can figure out how to get you to the place you want to go. So once again, that's topenddevs.com/coaching.
John, do you want to start us off with picks?
Yes. In about 10 seconds, it seems, y'all hear me talking here. All right. I have a couple picks for this week. So as we are going through, as I basically went through my liquor cabinet and was like, oh, I'm like really running low and I need to like get some more of the things that I like drink on a regular basis, but you know, a once a month basis is kind of regular, right? I got another scotch here. And so I just wanted to definitely like talk about that again. So I picked up an Aberlour Abenade. I'm actually holding the empty bottle right now, not the full one, but whatever. It's an awesome scotch. This is like, I feel like the thing right before COVID happened and like during the beginning of like the COVID era was for everyone to be into like bourbons that were like, you know, kind of like spicy, right? So they would have like a higher alcohol content, right? And they would just kind of have like that spicy taste. But like Abenade is like the original, well, I shouldn't say original, but it's been around for like forever as opposed to just being popular in the past couple of years or whatever. It's like got a higher alcohol content. So it has like a spicy taste. It's super awesome. absolutely one of like my favorite scotches. It's come down in price because it like doubled in price over a couple of years, and now it's like sort of back down to where it was. So at $70 ish a bottle, it's not the worst thing you've ever bought in your life, but it is expensive. Scotch sucks to buy if you aren't ready for it. So that's really awesome. And then the other thing that I wanted to recommend, because I am doing a couple upgrades right now, is the site is really cool. I'll have the link in just a second, because it basically allows you to upload your gem file, run it here, and then it's like, oh, hey, this is what you, or this gem doesn't exist in the new version of Rails, or this gem gets replaced with this one. So it's super awesome for that. It's been around for a while. It was actually gone for like, I don't know, like a year or two. And that was a tough time, but now it's back and it's really great. So I'll have the link in the show notes, since my computer's running so slow.
Nice. All right, Valentino, what are your picks?
So I'm slowly converting my house into a smart house. And I've been adopting this great framework, Home Assistant. And I wanted a nice kiosk that I could just, you know, toggle things on and off, or trigger some events, or check out dashboards. So I found it's called Smarty Pi. It's a little case that you could put your Raspberry Pi in the back, has a fan, and then has a little stand that it takes a little 7-inch screen and gives you a nice little kiosk. So I finally got that put together, and I've been experimenting with a time series geospatial relational data store to kind of get all of my devices be able to sense each other and kind of get a good sense for events that get fired and how they relate to each other throughout the house. So I've been playing with that. It's called Timescale Data DB and uses PostGIS with Postgres to kind of tie all that in. And so far, so good. It's been working pretty well for me. And then my last pick is kind of just funny. There is a famous UX guy, Brad Frost, and he has this great post on Twitter where he A-B tests his bird feeder, trying out different pegs to see what will work and favor the birds. And he finds that hex wrenches, like you get from IKEA, those worked the best. The birds preferred that the most. But it was really funny to see A-B testing done in a different way in the real world.
That's funny. I'm going to throw out a few picks. I'm going to do the board game pick first. I think this week on the other shows, I picked Wavelength, which is, it's not a board game in the kind that I generally like to play, where you're, you know, you have pieces and strategies and stuff. But we had a good time, and it was mostly just because it caused us to have fun conversations. So if that's kind of your speed, then definitely check it out. I got together, or my wife and I got together with her cousins, a couple of her cousins and their kids. We were just playing some games. This one, it has this giant dial, and so you spin the dial and it hides what's behind the dial, and then one person is giving the clue, and so they look at the dial and they see where on the spectrum they're trying to get people to guess. And then the clue card is like, the one that we had the most fun with was vapes doesn't vape. And the reason it was funny is because, you know, they both look at each other and go, our parents vape, right? Because we were, the clue was just an age range, which was obviously younger than my wife's aunt and uncle. Anyway, it turned into this fun conversation. So we had a bunch more, had some ongoing jokes while we were playing. Anyway, so it's not your hardcore board game where you're, you know, trying to outsmart everybody else. It's more of a party favor game, but it was fun. So I'm going to pick that. I've got some workshops coming up, working with some folks to put on some summits this year. And so anyway, go to Top End Devs and check out what we've got going on there. Beyond that, there was something else I was going to pick, and I'm just not thinking of it at the moment. So I guess I'll skip it and I'll come back to it next week. Bruno, do you have some picks for us?
I do. My wife and I picked Stella for our daughter's name. We got a new baby. Yeah, a bit more than 2 weeks ago. And it was Stella or Sarah, and it's Stella. So that was our pick. But in the tech world, since we're probably being listened by tech people, I have discovered RSS, I think a month ago. And that technology is just awesome. And the number of tools and the number of, it's just a thing that you know that exists. Probably all of us know about it, RSS, but like, I was surprised how useful that is. For example, I am using it to stalk people on GitHub. Like the amount of stalking you can, like the level of details you can get what people are doing on GitHub from RSS is just amazing. Like that's, and it, of course it's not in a negative way. Like I'm following what my friends are doing, and some, like, you know, a couple of my Ruby heroes, and the amount of detail that you can get, like what did they comment on, what did they, like where did they commit, like it's just insane. Like it's literally stalking. Like, so yeah, RSS, I highly recommend it. It's awesome.
Yeah, I can tell you that the majority of the people listening to this podcast use RSS, because RSS is the backbone of podcast subscription. So
Okay. Yeah,
I have written more than my fair share of RSS stuff. So anyway, cool. If people want to find you online, Bruno, where do they find you?
BrunoSutich.com or BrunoSutich.com. That's it. I'm not social networks, but yeah, just, you know, regular HTTP and then some SMTP for email. That's how you reach me.
Awesome.
We could subscribe to your GitHub feed.
Yep. Yeah. The RSS.
Stalk me. Stalk me, guys.
All right. We're going to go ahead and wrap it up here. Thanks for coming, Bruno.
It was a pleasure. Yeah, it was a pleasure. So,
all right, folks. Until next time, Max out.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.